It's Let's Talk here on a Wednesday. Jeff and Scott with you. We will have a little open phone time coming up toward the end of this morning's program.
Yeah, a couple of interesting topics we're going to save for the last segment. One will drive the Ironhead insane.
Uh-huh.
Again, that's our theme, insane, 2024. Anyway. Now, we're not saying the governor's speech was insane, but some would. Now, stop.
All right. Pretty insane.
Governor Shapiro gave his annual budget address yesterday down in Harrisburg. And we welcome to our program, again, local state representative Carrie Benninghoff. Representative, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Now, I assume you were like front and center at this gig yesterday?
I was front and closer to the bathroom.
But you were there.
As you get older, your priorities change a little bit, you know?
Okay.
I hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, that age thing is a real pain, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Now, let me start off with this question. Now, this was held in the Capitol Rotunda.
Correct.
Has that ever happened ever before, or is this the first time?
That was the first time. It was interesting performance.
Now, normally, this is in the State House chambers. I have been in that room. It's a very large room. Plenty of seating for everybody. But once again, I'm scratching my head here. What is up with this leak in the State House roof? I mean, down in Harrisburg, they can't fix a leak? What's going on there?
Well, interestingly, we were told this has been going on for several years. And you got to remember, there is a floor above the ceiling in the House of Representatives. That was originally designed to have a dome over it, but somebody did not follow the golden rule of measure twice, cut once, and they cut the hole too big. So the dome is not over the House chamber, so there's actually a floor above that. So I'm still mechanically trying to figure out how there's a leak when there's another story above that, and there wasn't a problem for 2 or 3 years, but just before we're supposed to do a budget address, now we have to move everybody off the House floor, because the House floor is the only chamber where all three bodies of government ever meets together.
So when's this leak supposed to finally get fixed?
Well, I don't know. I was in there a week and a half ago, which actually we're not even allowed to get access in there much anymore, but the door happened not to be locked, and I peeked in, and they have very nice scaffolding set up. And at the time, it's the cleanest scaffolding I ever saw, and the plastic draped over a few things is very clean, so I don't really know what's going on there. It's, to the naked eye, you don't see any damage, but again, granted, it's many feet up in the air, but I don't understand how we're fixing the leak from underneath the floor from where the roof is leaking. You know, that's like going down in your kitchen to fix the roof. The kitchen's one floor down.
I have to ask, any idea how much this is costing us to fix a leak?
Well, I just want to make sure there's actually a leak that we're fixing, but I did think about that last night. It's probably calls for doing the right-to-know request, because if no expenditures occurred other than to put the scaffolding up, which I'm sure was a very expensive adventure in itself, you know, if there's truly a leak and you had to do something, then there should be a bill of sale for the repair, because a lot of us are wondering, where is this leak? Nobody's ever had any moisture problems come down in the chamber. There's no sign of the paint flaking. You know, there's a beautiful mural on that ceiling. So that's yet to be determined on that, but I suspect it's very expensive. Everything gets done to this building is expensive because, you know, we have prevailing wage requirements, which generally requires the cost to be 25 to 30% more.
For goodness sakes, duct tape. All right. What's that stuff called? Flex Seal on television. Get the Flex Seal.
There you go. It's,
I mean,
well,
you can float a boat.
When I was building houses, caulk it. You know?
Yep.
Get outside and caulk it. Caulking fixes everything.
Now,
I'm actually going to look into that a little bit more because, one, it's been awful cumbersome from a time perspective. And granted, this is a very ornate building. It's a little different. There's a lot of different cracks, crevices, and little ravines and things because it's ornate design. So it is very cumbersome trying to keep a building like this sealed up. But this is under the main building. This is not like an atrium, which generally are ones where we have more leak problems. But it's crazy.
Now, I should know this. How many years have you been a representative now?
27.
Okay, so a long time.
Most of my life. I'm only 29.
Let's see. Penn Live, which is a media outlet out of Harrisburg, actually did a story on this like last night. The length of the governor's speech was almost an hour and a half, which apparently is one, or maybe it's the longest budget speech. Now, from your 27 whatever years, is that the longest speech you've ever had to sit through?
Absolutely. I don't even think the post 9/11 honorary ceremony we did for our nation went that long. It was a very long performance.
Performance, all right. Well, let's start with an open-ended question, all right? Give us impressions. I know you're Republican, Mr. Shapiro's a Democrat, so I'm certain there's disagreement in there, but give us, what were the, when you think about that speech yesterday, what comes to your mind?
Well, first of all, people need to understand the governor's budget address is strictly his idea about a budget for the year. A lot of people think that that becomes the gospel and then we just need to endorse it. But, you know, in representative government, that's not how things work. A governor's address is historically built on last year's budget to some extent, but it's just a framework. The word, if I were to obviously to say, it was very comprehensive in touching just about anybody and everybody across the Commonwealth. And obviously, there's a lot of money. When you're talking about spending an almost $4 billion more dollars, that's a lot of money. That's about an 8.5% increase at a time where, you know, I'm still hearing from people almost on a every other day basis about the high energy costs for them, heating their homes. A lot of people on the, you know, we're going door to door right now, just getting petition signed, are talking about the grocery bills. That it's a little alarming. You know, we worked pretty hard when I was still leader to put some money away. We had about $5 billion in the checkbook, $5 billion that went in the rainy day fund to try, no pun intended, not to fix roofs, but to, you know, have money there should we have a tough economic downturn. So I don't get overly excited one way or another, and that's not a partisan comment. I would say the same if a Republican governor put this forth. And by a disclaimer, I know Governor Shapiro. I served with him when he was in the House, and I would consider ourselves friends, and I can pretty much talk to him about anything. But it's a framework. It's a starting point. But there's some pretty extravagant policy changes that are going to be interesting to see how they unfold, actually, more so than the amount of money he's looking to spend.
All right. Such as, what are some of this new stuff that maybe you agree with, maybe you don't agree with? Name one or two things that came out yesterday that caught your interest.
Well, I think the two things that are significant is, historically, at least in my tenure here, are three, what we call four state-related colleges, Penn State, Temple, Pitt, and Lincoln, have always had a separate appropriation and not been a general line item, and they required the General Assembly, representatives of you and your communities, to give a two-thirds majority of vote to pass them. Well, the governor is going to take that away now and wants to just tuck that into the educational line item, which, you know, in theory, he'll have a lot more control, or a governor, whether it's he or the next one succeeding him, will have basically a lot more authority over that, and the General Assembly will only be able to pass a budget by a simple majority, meaning you only need one more than half the members to pass anything. Well, that's the conundrum we're kind of in right now with the close margin in the House currently tied, that one vote becomes very powerful one way or another. And the thought was, because they are not state-owned facilities, but they're affiliated with state government, Penn State being what they call a land-grant college, that two-thirds of the majority of those who are elected in the House and Senate should approve it. Well, that's going to cease should his budget pass as stated yesterday. That's a pretty significant change, and that's somewhat philosophical, depending where you are and the beliefs of a representative government. The other one I think that jumps out at me is his plan to try to combine community colleges, which provided kind of a different college experience and are kind of located in the different communities around the Commonwealth, with our state-owned campuses. And at the time that I believe, if I heard him correctly, because I had to try to listen to it twice, tuition would be about $1,000 a year. So I think about those people who are going there now. Most state-related colleges, I suspect the tuition somewhere around $13,000-$14,000. While that sounds good and sounds like we're almost giving college away to some people, you still have to pay the piper and you got to pay the bills. And I don't think any of these colleges, whether you combine them together or not, are going to be able, by attrition, reduce their costs enough to only charge $1,000 a student, that who's going to make up the difference of that? If you're generally anticipating 13, 14 grand per student, and now the state's going to lower it to 1,000, you know, and I know, the taxpayers are going to backfill that. I think that's going to be a tough sale outside the policy of combining a community college, which is a little bit different than state-owned. The state-owns also have, obviously, organized labor agreements with their unionized staff. I think it's going to be a difficult combination to do, but it looks good, sounds good. But those are two things that probably jump out at me. And the last thing I'd say to that, this is at a time, if you read most reports, where college enrollment has dropped by about 30% in the last 14 years. So are we creating another conglomerate to facilitate when people are actually changing their habits, learning long distance, choosing trade schools, going to nursing schools and other levels of education? This is a lot of dramatic changes at an interesting crossroad, I think.
Carrie, another thing that was talked about yesterday is, and I think we've touched on this before, but part of what the governor is proposing as a solution to pay for all of the spending that was proposed is the legalization of marijuana here in Pennsylvania. Just your thoughts on that and why, I know you've touched on this before on our program, but since it is now part of the his proposal, if you can talk about that and the concerns you have with it.
Well, it's interesting that you raised that, because part of the conversation early on the budget is that we have $14 billion at the end of this budget cycle. Allegedly, you know, we'll have $14 billion in a rainy day fund. 10 of that is what we set aside when we were still in the majority, and it really ought to be spent. We need to give that back to the taxpayers. Well, I don't have a problem with that, but I would rather give it back to the taxpayers in cutting costs, cutting tax rates, or not that I'm a big fan of giving those hokey checks that were done years ago. But there's a difference of giving the money back to the taxpayers and reducing your costs so you don't have the demand for that money. And then we're going to turn around and legalize marijuana so we have more revenue to have more revenue to spend. That just seems counterintuitive to good fiscal management. And again, that to me is not partisan. It shouldn't have to be partisan. If you can't say that you shouldn't be sitting on money, and that's how the governor talked about, well, you know, this is really people's money, and we ought to be able to spend this and give it back to them by spending it. It seemed counterintuitive. And you know I'm no big fan of legalizing marijuana. And it's not that I'm anti. It's more about the fact that we have still a major opioid drug problem. I would think that if I was the governor's administration, I'd be going around to my medical facilities and say, how are we doing that? You know, we've had a disaster declaration, which most people don't know, under Governor Wolf, that has not gone away. It technically is still in place, and yet we're still losing roughly 14 people a day. So do the quick math. That's 300 people a month are dying in Pennsylvania by some drug addiction. The majority of it is opioids, and heroin's being a big uptick. And you talk to your local emergency rooms and people that work there, they have overdose problems all the time. And I'll close on this, and I'm no expert, I'm just a former orderly and coroner, but I've seen some of this stuff firsthand. Regardless of what people think about marijuana, it is still does alter your mental state. Now, there are those who argue it's not addictive, and I'm not going to get the science of it because I'm not a scientist, but why do people use it? Not because it tastes good, right? They're looking for some kind of emotional benefit. No different than somebody who drinks 10 beers. That you can't say that it's completely safe and there's no problem. It's the secondary behaviors that people who overuse this stuff and or decide to go drive or maybe belong or in some kind of public transit that now impose on you and I. What a person does in their own home is none of my business. I just found the whole conversation kind of contradictive, that we got lots of extra money in surplus, we should spend it, but yet we need to generate more money by legalizing a drug. It's a popular thing, and I think it's only in the budget because there's a segment of the population who he's trying to appeal to. This budget's about appealing to a multitude of constituencies across the Commonwealth.
All right, we got about 30 seconds till we take a break. Do you think the marijuana thing will pass? Do you think that, does that have a chance to pass?
Yes.
Because
I think it'll pass the House, and I think there's a handful in the Senate who have supported that ideology, and I do think it'll pass.
But you're against this?
Not by my vote, but it'll pass.
Because say you're against this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand. Regardless, I'm an independent kind of guy. I believe that people have the ability to make decisions for themselves. But you're not, you're still inflicting something on the community, and we've done, we have not got the opioid addiction problem under control, even though we've been trying to fight this for 10 years. Now, there will be those who say, well, if you let people smoke marijuana, then they won't be using opiates. I don't necessarily buy that.
All right, local.
I do know that our community spent a ton of money on this opioid problem, and why would we exacerbate it by adding another drug, whether it's marijuana or anything?
Got to take a break. Local State Representative Carrie Benninghoff's our guest on Let's Talk. We got much more to talk about. We'll do that right after this.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox. Fox Ironhead.
The Bald Eagle area wrestling team rolled to a 55-9 win over Quaker Valley at Wingate last night. Austin Lomason, Cameron Dubs, Caleb Close, Eric Clark, and Liam Purcell all recorded pins for the Eagles. Bald Eagle area now advances to the PIAA Team Dual Championships and will face Notre Dame Green Pond on Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock in Hershey. All 10 starters for the Penn State wrestling team are now in the top 10 at their weight class in the Intermat rankings. Half of the lineup is now ranked number 1. Bo Bartlett is up to number 1 at 141. He joins Levi Haynes, Carter Starachi, Aaron Brooks, and Greg Kirkfleet as top-ranked wrestlers. Freshman Braden Davis is up to 2nd at 125, and freshman Tyler Kasak is now 10th at 149. Aaron Nagao and Bernie Truax are 6th at 133 and 184, respectively. And Mitchell Messenbrink remains 7th at 165.
Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
Here's the K2 Roots Foxcast. And sunshine today, the high 40 degrees. Mainly clear and cold tonight, low 20 to 25. Several hours of sunshine tomorrow, and temperatures will strive for 45 Friday. Mild, but several hours of sunshine. And temperatures taking a run at 50. This is WeatherBell.com. Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi.
We don't just talk sports. We live it. Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
Beer Belly's Beverage in downtown State College, located at 258 West Hamilton Avenue within the Hamilton Square Shopping Center. At Beer Belly's, they have over 500 beers, including domestics, imports, microbrews, seasonal selections, ciders, and more. Beer Belly's is open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday, noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Check out our website at beerbellysbeverage.com. Beer Belly's Beverage, 258 West Hamilton Avenue in State College. Beer better, Beer Belly's.
Join us for our Winning Ways broadcast from Cafe 210 West in downtown State College. This special show will air this coming Monday, February 12th from 5 to 6 p.m. here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jim Galani of the Keystone Sports Network, former Penn State offensive lineman Landon Tangwall, and Kendall Skalicki will handle the hosting duties. Special guests will include the legendary Charmarette Curtis, who is now heading up the Teammates for Life organization, and Lady Lion basketball coach Carolyn Keeger, along with a player or two from the Penn State women's basketball team. The event gets underway at 4:30 at Cafe 210 with specials on various drinks and the burger basket. The Winning Ways broadcast will run from 5 to 6. So if you're heading up to the Jordan Center for the wrestling meet Monday night, this would be a great way to kick off your evening. And stay tuned for more great shows right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
The Fox!
Hi, this is Corey Comfort from Joel Comfort Toyota in State College. Are you looking for a dealership to call home? Joel Comfort Toyota is a locally owned family business that has been serving the community for over 45 years. Come see us and let us help you with your next vehicle experience. We're located at 120 East Clinton Avenue in State College, just behind the Waffle Shop on North Athens Street. Or visit us 24/7 at joelcomfort.com. And remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
The title and tag service that is customer-friendly and locally owned is at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned in Pleasant Gap. And as part of the Joel Confer family of dealerships, Monica Prisk is experienced and has been serving customers for 13 years. Cameron Confer is on the title and tag team and is there to help you with all of your title and tag needs. Stop at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned at 475 East College Avenue in Pleasant Gap and have Monica or Cameron answer any of your title and tag questions. Remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
The Fox Sports Weekend.
For the past 65 years, there's only been one race where a legend can cement his legacy.
Jimmy Johnson's going to win the Daytona 500.
Or an underdog can experience a career-defining moment.
Finally, Michael Waltrip is going to win, winning the Daytona 500.
Who will experience that this year? The 66th running of the Daytona 500, February 18th.
Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox. Get up and get going.
It's Let's Talk here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jeff Byers, Scott Giese with you. Again, a little open phone time coming up in the final segment of this morning's program.
Once again, local state representative Carrie Benninghoff, our guest, talking about Governor Shapiro's State of the State, call it that, address down in Harrisburg yesterday. All right, let's see. Education funding, and I'm talking K through 12 now. And we're trying to line up a guest, might be a couple of weeks, with one of these groups that is pushing this idea about we need more funding for local schools across the state, la la la, so we're working on that. The number that I've seen is $5 billion extra dollars is supposed to go to K through 12 schools across the state. Governor mentioned some of this stuff yesterday. What about that issue? And a follow-up, $5 billion is coming from where? Is it going to come from that big rainy day fund? So what about education funding, and where's the money coming from?
Well, those are yet to be answered. Sometimes in a gubernatorial delivery like that, you throw big ideas out, but you don't necessarily have to have the resource nailed down where that money is going to come from. I think we all want to have a well-educated electorate, and starting with our K through 12. You know, one of the things I think that anyone preparing a budget, anyone serving in public office has to recognize is things have changed a lot in the last couple of years. And, you know, whether it's long-distance learning in higher education, how people learn, my goal has always been when I think about education, are we spending the money wisely, but more importantly, are we providing educational opportunities that's really training a workforce for tomorrow's jobs, not just today, because the workforce continues to change. And we saw that a lot post-COVID. You know, a lot of facilities don't even have their entire workforce back. There are more people working from home. You know, it spills over into other issues, and I don't want to get into this specifically, but, you know, we have an issue with our local transit authority, and some of that has to do with the fact that people's habits have changed. $5 billion is an awful lot of money. I think people need to keep that in perspective. If you take a quick pie chart back to our elementary days, they're easy to understand. The state budget, which this one's going to be well over 40-some billion dollars, I think it's $48 billion, about 40% of that money is K through 12 in higher education. Another rough 40% of that is through human services, and 9% of that is for corrections. Well, quick math will tell you that only leaves about 11% or less to fund the entire state and all the other functions, whether it's state police, whether it's DCNR, DEP. So keep that in mind. Where all that money is going to come is yet to be determined. And I think we need to be looking at where enrollments are. I mean, we see in the post-secondary education, college enrollments dropped 30% in the last 14 years. And some of that is because of people making other decisions, different career paths, different educational opportunities than when you and I were younger. And public education populations are dropping. We do not have the same birth rate, live birth rates, in conjunction with the amount of people that are getting into senior years in our state. We are third highest aging state in the nation, so the question begs to ask, if you have less people going into the school system because you have less live births, you have less people in the tax paying age bracket, who is going to pay for these things? So this is going to be a very important discussion. We all want to invest in good quality education, but that's a pretty significant increase. I think that's somewhere close to 18% overall. And at the end of the day, no different than you do with your own spending. All I want to do is make sure that we see good returns on the money we're investing. And some of that has to be in how do we measure academic success, not just getting them out of high school, but are they successful 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road? And the last thing I'd say to that is when our colleges come before the legislature and testify at budget time, the question has been raised, why is it taking 5 years to get a college education, or i.e. a four-year degree? And most of the college professors, pardon me, presidents will tell you the kids come to us ill-prepared. They can't do an outline. They're not very good in their English, basic math. So all education funding to me is about where you make an investment, are you seeing improvements, are we being successful in preparing students for the future? This will probably be one of the biggest areas of the budget that will be discussed and wrestled over.
Well, and Kerry, let me just... I think one of the difficulties here on the education front, and I really don't hear much talk on either side, but my wife does a lot of work in the schools. I have a couple of friends who are teachers in different districts, and I am telling you, you can throw as much money at it as you want. You can have the best teachers in all of the world, and if these kids are getting 7 hours of fantastic education in the day and then going home and getting zero support from a drug-addicted mother and a non-existent father, I am here to tell you it does not matter. And again, I don't have, I'd love to, hey, Kerry, you need to spend the money here and then we solve the problem. I don't know what the answer there is, but I throwing more money at this, to me, I don't think the problem is that we don't have educators who care. I don't think the problem is that we don't have principals who care in the poorer school districts. I think in too many cases, and you know, I'm not generalizing that this is the case with every family in every poor district, but even in rich districts, you have kids who are going home to horrible, heartbreaking, impoverished environments, and I'm just telling you, if you're not getting that support at home or elsewhere outside of the school, I mean, it doesn't even have to be from a parent or a sibling, but it can be from a neighbor, but there has to be somebody else taking an interest in the kiddo's well-being and their education. I think we are expecting our educators to work miracles where the circumstances are such that it is just, it is not possible. It doesn't matter how much money you throw. It doesn't matter how great the teachers are. There has to be additional support in place. And I think in too many cases, we're not getting that. And that doesn't even begin to talk about the support structure at the school. I think you need counselors, mental health help, all of that stuff. And I think we're woefully lacking in many areas in that regard in the state. Any thoughts on that?
Jeff, I think you wrapped a pretty good bow on that, and you're exactly right. And it's kind of like an athlete. I coach Little League baseball, soccer, girls, fast pitch, whatever. But I only get them for an hour and a half, 2-3 nights a week. They're only going to be as good as they go home to practice. You know, there's simple basics to that, and you're 100% correct. And, you know, sadly, it's not necessarily just impoverished families. It's about where people's priorities are. If you sit there, and I can't remember the pastor said the other week, but he was talking about statistics about how much time people spend on social media. Social media has learned to monopolize people's lives. That, you know, there's 2 or 3, 4 people in the house banging away on phones, playing Candyland or whatever these different games you can play. I don't even know how to do any of that jazz. But the point of that is the focus has not been on, is my child retaining this information? Am I sitting down? You know, there's a lot of children in Pennsylvania whose parents never sit down and read to them. And sadly, there are some that would argue, well, it's because everybody has to work two jobs. Well, I think some of it has to do with priorities. Because if you were honest with ourselves, from you guys are a little younger than I am, maybe, but most driveways have three cars in them. Most houses have two or three flat-screen TVs in them. Most people have cell phones. And I have people come to me that are below poverty-level income, but somehow they all have several phones, not one per couple, but each person in the couple, that there are societal changes that have occurred where our priority of making sure your child has a good education, and that's the number one thing in our life, is not taking number one priority. You look at the post-World War II generation, they wanted to get back, they didn't want to talk about the war experience, they wanted to start their houses, build a house, start a family, get their kids educated, and hope that their next generation was living better than they are. You're correct. Teachers, educators are spending more time on social issues. Kids are coming in wearing the same clothes they wore for 3 days, obviously not bathing in between. You know, there's these programs now, the governor proposed in his, about putting these food packages together so kids have food outside of the school calendar. You know, we're already in a lot of schools giving free breakfast, free lunches. There are backpack programs over in Phillipsburg to try to provide kids with food Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, because the parents aren't doing that. There's something broken societally when the schools have got to become all things to all children. Parents, guidance counselors, social emotional support. I've never seen the demand or the need for what we hear for these mental health services. What has changed fundamentally to require that? You and I didn't see any of that when we were in high school for the most part. No. Something's changed dramatically as a society, and I think you nailed it. We have to figure out why that's happening.
All right, one more education question of sorts. Charter school funding. Now, folks in public schools, I think, have been complaining about charter schools seemingly forever. I know the governor talked a little bit about charter school funding. You know, maybe what did he mention? What do you think about that?
Well, why did charter schools come about? They came about because parents were frustrated with certain environments that their children were in. They weren't learning. They had all this other competitive stuff going on. And now, as you know, across the Commonwealth, some of our schools aren't very safe, and so parents wanted an alternative. It's the same reason we're having an argument regarding the opportunity through basically private instruction. Ironically, the charter schools are considered a public school. They're just a different type of learning environment. The money follows the child. But for every student that leaves a public school, the school only pays 75% of that money towards the charter school. The money's going to get spent either way. So it's not like a lot of schools will say, well, we're losing money over them. Well, wait a minute. You don't have that child in your classroom anymore. You're still retaining 25% of the money you get from the state anyhow, but that money is going to another educational opportunity with the goal that these kids are able to maximize and get a better learning environment. The wrestling match with the Senate last year was the governor talked about believing in having other alternative education and for people who went to, I won't say private schools, but their the money we use for early, pardon me, EIT tax, and where people's money could go and give them an alternative education opportunities. And then he got in and decided to pull that funding. Those programs only developed because people were frustrated with the environment that their children were in. They were locked in by a zip code, and in some cases it was either poor education and or a violent situation that they didn't want their kids in. So at the end of the day, people complained about charter schools. Now, cybercar charter schools I have a little bit more issue with because it's a little harder to put your finger on exactly what is happening. Is somebody just clicking on a computer, and what are they doing all day long? It was a little harder to kind of measure, and are the outcomes as good? Most of charter schools are, you know, they're brick and mortar, and the kids go to them, and they are part of the public school system, and they have to abide by a board that reviews what's going on. It's the cyber schools, which I think people are misunderstanding, that people have a little bit more problem with. At the end of the day, it's people want choice, parents want choice, parents want the opportunity to give their children the best opportunity possible, but there are some geographies in our Commonwealth that have very bad, poor learning environments. At the end of the day, I would say we should be measuring whether these things are worthy to have by what are these kids' curriculum outcomes? Are they graduating? Are the graduation rates any better than the public schools that they could have been in? And at the end of the day, I would also say, is anybody checking back to see what is the performance and success of these people 5 years after high school? To me, that's the great barometer. Are they gainfully employed? Do they have family-sustaining jobs? or are they just kind of mediocre or working two or three jobs because they didn't educate them very well K through 12? That's what as society and as investors, which you and I as taxpayers are, we're investing in a system. Are we getting a return on that?
All right, now we have a minute and a half left. School vouchers did not come up yesterday, but allegedly the governor's for them. So what about those?
Well, that's a bit what the big argument was in last year's budget process, that he, in as candidate, said he supported people having other alternatives of, and having the choice to be able to go somewhere else for school. And then when he got in, he pulled it out of the budget, and that's why that budget process went late. You are correct. That did not come up in this year's discussion as they look over the different areas of investment. While I'm excited about having more career technical investment and some other opportunities, that is not there. Parents want choices. You know, whether you like that system or not, it arose because they weren't happy with the current system. And again, I think people need to see what is the graduation rate of our schools and what is the secondary enrollment later. Are these kids doing anything beyond 12th grade? To me, those are how you measure success in education funding. But I said Jeff hit the nail on the head earlier. More money is perceived as the only cure for these things. We put a lot of money in these education systems, and regardless of if people think it's enough, 40% of the state's $48 billion goes in one area, and that's education. That's a lot of money. And there's only about 10 to 11% flexible of other money within the budget if you take away human services and corrections. Services are also needed. So where do we get this? We're setting ourselves up as a state for a significant tax increase if we were to fully fund this budget as it was stated yesterday. I mean significant in the next couple of years. Because we're going to burn through this surplus. This budget burns through over half the surplus. And even the money that they think they're going to get from from legalized marijuana is pennies. It's pennies on the dollar. They'll never be able to fund half these things, much less the amount of new spending that's being created. And we have to be smart about it. It's not that we don't like some of the ideas, but it's not going to generate that money.
We're out of time. Appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much. More of Let's Talk coming right back.